Woohoo!
Blog Talk Radio.
Do they hear that, Blog Talk Radio?
Do they what?
Do the listeners hear her say Blog Talk Radio, or it's just us?
1,000 mics will hear it, and Blog Talk Radio just, I think they hear your show is now live or whatever that last sentence is, but...
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't know. I got to check that out. I don't know.
I'm just curious. Okay.
Yeah, 1,000 mics will hear anything that we hear when we tune in 1,000 mics, so they're on. So
welcome, Blog Talk
yes,
Radio, people.
Yes, Blog Talk Radio, and 1,000 mics has been with us for about a minute to 2 minutes or so, and so welcome also to 1,000 mics. Everybody out there listening tonight, this evening, okay, you can stop. This evening, they're a little bit too applaudy there. We are at least I am transmitting live from Fountain Hills, Arizona, which is just outside the Tonto National Forest.
All right.
And you laugh, but I have a little A on there that says Fountain Hills, and there's the Tonto National Forest just to the northeast. I am outside the gate of Tonto National Forest, Arizona. Unbelievable. And right now, since you asked, it is 65 degrees.
Yes, it is. And actually, there is a winery that is not too far from there.
No way.
The Great American Southwest.
Oh, my God.
And is and if I can close this window that's in my way, it's called Echo Canyon Vineyard and Winery. Very close to that.
Oh, wow, wow, wow.
And it is talking about the wines in that area and the wineries in that area. And let me jump up forward here and find the one that I was just looking at earlier that is, there it is, Keeling Schaefer Winery. Hmm. Keeling Schaefer Winery is right there next to the forest.
Okay.
It is located about 5,000 feet above sea level.
Oh, wow.
And there's a little button on their homepage here. It says, click here for weather, and it says, cloudy with a high of 53 and a low of 38.
Wow. Now, that I wasn't expecting because down here where we're at, I'm kind of like in the lower air elevations. It's only going to be 52 tonight, but it is kind of cool and, rainy and cloudy and that kind of thing. It's cloudy right now, but I'm not that high up, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. 5,000 feet, Chiricahua National Monument, in Arizona, right in that area, right close to the forest there.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, on Friday, it's supposed to have snow showers in the evening.
Oh, wow!
And get some snow showers. The high of only 56. By Monday, it's back up to 79, but the low is still going to be 45. But it's
that's amazing.
It is. It's cold there.
I left all my coats in Florida, so.
I imagine you would. Not expecting snow showers, you know.
Not out here in Arizona.
You own a coat?
And gloves.
Okay.
For winter wear for our 2 weeks of winter. Let's see.
Okay.
I guess that's the end of the show. Thank you all, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in. Yeah.
Now that the weather's done. We have the intro. We'll be back. Yeah, we can do the intro, right? We still have time?
Yeah, we have time.
Okay, cool. We'll do the intro. We'll be right back in 60 seconds, starting now.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Sounds like you.
Welcome
it is.
To All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Yeah. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome.
There he is.
Woo-hoo. Thank you.
There he is. Oh, that was
Thank
quick.
Thank you, bus people. No bus people, no claws. What? Give them more wine.
They started to. I don't know what happened to them. I didn't hit the stop button. Maybe they got they realized they were on the air and they got shy.
Or they had to take a drink. Yeah.
Yes, and this time I drank my wine before the show started, so now I'm just drinking whatever's ice created before. So, yeah, the wine is gone now.
I'm drinking some Chardonnay during the show here.
Interesting. So, in case you just joined us, we're transmitting live from, from Fountain Hills, Arizona, which is just outside the Tonto National Forest, where it is a nice and cool 65 degrees and a 27% humidity. Ron is on. We are talking about Arizona tonight. And we're all ready to go. Oh, actually, I think you're going to back it up a little bit and discuss something about Alaska first.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Back to Alaska. And I'm here in sunny, warm Florida. Well, Mike is out there on the road today, but actually got up to 80 today here. 80 clear skies. It's a really, really beautiful day. And then no snow showers predicted. Alaska, we discussed last week. And one of the things I do whenever I discuss a different state, I pick up the phone and I call wineries, which is really a kick because I get a hold of a lot of different people and stuff. And sometimes I can't get a hold of them, so I leave messages. Well, I left a message last week with Alaskan Wilderness Wines. They are located on Kodiak Island. I left them and I'll give you their website if anyone is interested in looking them up. It's Alaska Wild Wine at gci.net. That's their web address. That's their email address. And I don't have their website in front of me. I'm sorry. I thought I did. But I'll look it up here while we're talking.
That's the one that's open by appointment only?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's the one open by appointment only. They let's see. Here's their website, www.alaskawildwine.com, located in Kodiak, Alaska. And Kodiak is the island on the south end of Alaska, the main body, not in the tail that comes down, but the main body below Anchorage, and reasonably close to Anchorage, below Anchorage. And that's where the winery is located. Lisa called me the other day and said that she wanted to return my call. Didn't have a chance to explain to her that Alaska was over, but after talking with her, I have to back up and tell you more about Alaska and more about Alaska wineries. Lisa is really, really a lot of fun to talk with. Her husband, Steve, and Lisa do the winery. They've been in business for 11 years, since 1998 is when they first opened. And they said 11 years, 98 until now is actually 12, but I guess they opened the latter part of 98. They have lived in Alaska for quite a few years. She is a college teacher at Kodiak College, which is part of the University of Alaska system. And her husband, Steve, is a biologist for the Alaska Field and Game Office. He's out quite a bit, and this time of year, quite busy from what she says. He's on the road quite a bit, and they don't do a whole lot of the wines. But they do make wines. They they make a variety of fruit wines, 100% Alaskan berry wines, and she emphasized that it is 100% Alaskan berries and fruits. They don't pull out the juice or anything from any part of the country. Everything's right there. They do a berry wine, a blueberry wine. They do a salmon wine and a salmon berry wine. And I asked her, you know, I've heard a couple other wineries in Alaska talk about salmon berry. And I asked her, I said, what does this salmon berry taste like? What is a salmon berry? And she said, it's a lot like a raspberry, only not quite as strong. It really is a nice, pretty color and a little bit milder. And she said, it's very fruity as it comes out. And so I think Lisa says she's going to try to tune in. Lisa, if you're listening, you mentioned that we can trade. I'll send you an orange and tea lime. You can send me some salmon berry wine. Let's do that. I think I'm going to try to get some salmon berry. And then when you get back from Arizona on your road trip there, Michael, I'll share some salmon berry with you. Well, actually, it's probably going to take me longer than that to get it here. So, but they also make a blackberry, a black currant, and two different types of mead, a honey mead. And they said there's a local bee farmer around there, and they get the honey from the bee farmer, and obviously it's not orange blossoms or anything. It's local flowers and stuff. They make two mead wines. They have also won 18 medals, and she was really quite proud of the fact that they are winners of 18 medals, which is really great. They've entered in international competitions. They've entered in competitions in Indianapolis, which is New York, I believe they said they entered in, and they've got themselves 18 medals, which, congrats to them. They did a great job on that. She told me that they started out in their basement. They was going to do a winery and decided to start out in the basement. So Steve, being a biologist, had his table set up with all the test tubes and all the stuff. And as a winemaker myself, believe me, some of the stuff that we use to test stuff really looks quite quite scientific, although it's not that scientific, but you have all this stuff sitting on the counter and stuff, and with your beakers and your flask and all the stuff that you do your testing, it looks quite intimidating. And they said they have a little 600 square foot place in their basement that they were setting this up. They had had to have the state come in and take all this and certify them so they can open up the winery. Well, State Highway Patrol came in with them, our local sheriff, I can't remember which, but I believe it was the highway. And he walked in and they took him into the basement, and he was ready to arrest them. He thought they were cooking up drugs down there. It just she said she had to laugh. She said it was hilarious that he was, was going to arrest them and all that. And she said, to begin with, she said, why would anyone who was doing something illegal invite them, a highway patrol or an officer of the law into it to see it if they were doing anything illegal, which, in itself is a good question. So she loved to tell that story about how they were mistakenly almost accused of drugs. They have three 300-gallon tanks, around 300 gallons, 280, 320, something like that, stainless steel, that's what they use. She said their wine averages around $25 a bottle. They do sell it in the local stores up there. And when she said that around $25 a bottle, I'm thinking, oh, that's expensive, but not really. We're talking Alaska here, where a gallon of milk, I think, runs about $5 or $6 a gallon. So $25 a gallon for being Alaska is probably reasonable. I asked her also about the government. I'm always curious to how government treats people in each of the states and what's going on. And I'm really going to get into government on something else here tonight, too. I'll explain to that and go into that. But I asked her about government, and she said that in Alaska, they have to have be certified. Everyone in Alaska who serves wine or alcohol or anything has to be certified every 3 years and have to be fingerprinted. And they must have a card or a certificate certifying the fact that they've been fingerprinted and that they're okay to serve this. Again, as she said, it's the government trying to stick their finger into it and get even more money out of everybody. If you are a bartender, if you are serving wine, whatever you're doing, you have to be certified, and which requires paying your fees to do this. And so she said that it's just another thing the government is making them do, another hoop that they have to jump through, and continuously do it every 3 years. Thompson is their last name, Thomsen, Thompson. She said that her husband is a Swedish, and the Thompson without a P in it. She said that she is and Lisa, if you're listening, I'm sorry on this. She said that she is half Canadian and half Eskimo, Native Eskimo. So she had a name for it, and for the life of me, it was hilarious, but I didn't write it down, which I should kick myself for not writing it down. But she said that they have a couple of children in college and a couple of children still in high school. And I asked if the children helped them with the bottling and helped them with everything, because they said they do everything by hand. And she says, no, no, not at all. She says, Steve is too particular, and he doesn't want the young ones anywhere near. And I said, they're not young. They're in high school. And she goes, they're young when it comes to us messing with that. So they won't. She won't let them touch that and all that. So Alaska Wilderness Wines, Alaska Wild Wine is the website. Interesting stuff. They can ship out of the areas and stuff like that. She also told me something I thought was very, very interesting. She said the first winery in Alaska was opened in the late 40s and early 50s. And they made a milk wine. And I said, milk wine? And she goes, yeah, it sounds as bad as it tasted. She said, but it actually was a milk wine out of milk, not from cows, but from, the local whatever they can milk. And they made a milk wine. So that would just, I didn't pursue that anymore. I didn't look it up. It was just scary. So. Alaska Wilderness Winery, I wanted to talk about that for a few minutes. And again, Lisa, if you're listening, thank you. I appreciate the phone call and the information. Now, we're going to go into Arizona. But before we go into Arizona, I've got something else I want to discuss for a few minutes here. Mike had the foresight of sending out a notice on LinkedIn. And if you're not familiar with LinkedIn, it's just another social networking site, usually for businesses. And LinkedIn, a lot of people belong to it, and you can send out a flat, just like Facebook, flat email that goes around to everybody. And Mike had the foresight and the good thought of sending out a blanket email to everyone saying what we were doing and looking for wineries and people associated with wineries and if they would like to join us on our program, and if they do, get in touch. We got a couple of responses. Actually, he got a couple of responses. One of them was from a winery in Oregon, I think you said, right? Yes. One from Oregon, and then we got another one from, and I don't know where this winery is from Lauren Ackerman, owner of Ackerman Family Vineyards. Mike, did you find out where this is from? Or
I'll look it up.
Well, I don't know. I was curious where Ackerman Family Vineyards were. I didn't have any way to follow up and really find out where it is without looking through hundreds of them. So no. I guess I could have just Googled it and found out. But Ackerman Family Vineyards, Lauren Ackerman, owner of Ackerman Family Vineyards, sent us back, and she was quite concerned about something called, she said, and if I may quote from her email she sent back to Mike, she said, you should also talk about the upcoming bill being put before Congress that would end direct shipping across state lines. It says the impact it will have on small wineries could be devastating. And she referred to a blog. I want to talk about that for a few minutes. I went to the blog. I looked at the blog, printed it out. It's House Resolution Bill Number 4034. The Anti-Consumer Wine Bill is what it's being referred to as by people who hate the bill, obviously. It states, and let me read you a little bit about this. It says the House Resolution 5034 is by far the most audacious attempt ever by America's beer, wine, and spirit wholesalers to take over complete and total control of the country's alcohol beverage market, and in the process create circumstances in all 50 states that assure consumers only have access to the slim number of wines to which wholesalers decide consumers ought to have access. Now, let me explain about what's going on. A few years ago, and I explained this in some previous programs, but I want to go into it quickly again here. And I don't want to get real political on this thing, but this is something that if anyone's listening wants to contact their congressman and tell them to stop H.R. 5034, it can help all of us. But a few years ago, wineries in Michigan and New York sued, stating that it was illegal to discriminate against small wineries because they couldn't ship out of the state and they couldn't ship across state lines. And they sued on the ground, on the Commerce clause, the Constitution's Commerce Clause, stating that it was discriminatory to be shipping out of state wines from small wineries. It went through the lower courts, bounced around lower courts. One court ruled this way, one court ruled another, finally made it to the Supreme Court of the United States. He also was arguing for the wineries. Went to the Supreme Court of the United States. They presented it that it was in conflict of the Constitution Commerce Clause, the discriminatory laws against wine shipping, and it was unconstitutional, and something should be done. The Supreme Court ruled in a 245-page ruling that you're right, it's unfair, basically stating that you can't discriminate based on free trade on the Commerce Clause. It is discriminatory to not let small wineries do this. The ruling done in 2005 stated the Granholm. It was the Granholm versus Heald, which the Supreme Court decision stated that Granholm reasoned that because the state's goals of temperance and orderly collection could have been achieved without burdening interstate commerce and discriminating against out-of-state interests, those discriminatory wine shipping laws were unconstitutional violations of the Constitution's Commerce Clause. If you look back to the states and said, states, you need to do something because that is unconstitutional. So the states started to battle around with it. Now, like I say, this ruling was in 2005, the latter part of 2005, and the states have been fooling with it ever since. And I mean literally fooling with it. Some states will make some rulings, other states will make other rulings. Alabama, very strict on the rules. I talked to them. Kansas, very strict on their rules. Other states have opened it up. They let you ship if you're shipping from one person or from a winery to another winery. Some of them, they say you can only ship 9 gallons a year. But then the question arises, who's going to control that and who's going to keep records of how much you're shipping out of this state to that person and stuff. And it just – and then the state steps in and says, okay, we're going to – Florida is not the only, you know, Florida's not left out of this. Florida's changed their laws 5 or 6 times. So say you can ship to these people, and then you can't ship to these people, and then you can do this, and then you can't do this. And every legislation that gets up there, and every group of people, and everyone starts bringing something else up. And it just, if they realize how much wine is exploding in this country, they should really promote it instead of trying to put shackles on us. But the language in H.R., House Resolution Bill 5034, and again, I'm quoting on this, would mean that states, I'm quoting the website, would mean that states would not have to show that there is no other non-discriminatory means of achieving the goals of temperance, an orderly market, or tax collection. What they're saying is it's not up to the states anymore. They don't have to worry about it. Whether in order for the law that discriminates against out-of-state commerce to be upheld is challenged, the state would only have to show that the law in some small way achieves those goals. So what they're saying is you don't have to prove that it's not doing it. They just have to say, well, this is achieving the goal of open commerce. Now, it could be, you know, we're letting it ship over like this, but then they can regulate it so strongly that virtually you can't do that. One of the things they can throw out is keeping out of the hands of minors. And this is something every winery I've ever talked to and everybody in the business thinks is such a ridiculous thing. Keeping out of the hands of minors. A minor is not going to get on the phone, call up Florida State's winery and say, I'd like to have a case of wine shipped to my address. Here's the credit card number. And then wait a week or however long it takes for it to get there, wherever they're calling from, and then be there and sign for it and have somebody sign for it, an adult sign for it, or somebody that they know, so they can drink some wine. It doesn't work that way. Every one of you have been youth at one time, and if you want to drink, you'll stand in front of a liquor store, hand somebody $5, and say, "Do you buy me a six pack?" And that's how youth drink. I mean, or any number of ways, steal it from their parents' cabinet. But to think that they're going to order wine and have it shipped to them a week later and stuff like this. And so we need to watch and make laws to keep it out of the hands of the miners.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah.
So this new law that's looking at being passed is going to completely change shipping because of that. Let me tell you what will happen immediately. If it passes, the states of Michigan, Texas, Illinois, Massachusetts, and likely Maryland will see laws introduced to prohibit the shipment of wine into those states by out-of-state wineries and retailers. So immediately we lose those states. Those states are completely controlled from legislatures to regulators by wholesalers who do not want direct shipping. And any state that has wholesalers that don't want direct shipping or distributors who do not want direct shipping is going to be on that. And these are strong, strong lobbies. The distributors are strong lobbies out there, strong, big, big companies. And if they can stop the small wineries from shipping across state lines and have to go through them if they're going to use them at all, then it's better for them. So, you know, I mean, and I'm sitting here and I'm sounding like I'm a regular personality who is griping about the government and stuff like that, and I don't want to sound like that, but it just, once I was reading this bill, I shuddered in the implications of what could happen if this bill passes, what could happen if this goes through. The bill itself, it's before the 111th Congress, second session, H.R., which means House of Representatives, H.R. Bill 5034. And again, write that down, contact your congressman. You can go on the computer and look up congressmen, and there are email addresses for all the congressmen in the country. Email them. Do whatever you do. Do not pass this bill. This bill is to support state-based alcohol regulations, to clarify evidentiary rules for alcohol matters, and to ensure the collection of all alcohol taxes and for other purposes to be enacted by Congress. This act may be cited as the Comprehensive Alcohol Regulatory Effectiveness Act of 2010, and they're shortening it to the CARE Act of 2010.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they care about themselves. You know.
Yeah.
But the bill goes on and all that. But the amendment to the Wilson Act, and the Wilson Act was the first one. I'm not going to read you this whole bill. It'll only take me a couple minutes, but I'm not going to burden you with that because it's a legalese and Congress ease and how it's written and all that stuff. But the act enabled an act to limit the effect of the regulations of commerce between several states and with foreign countries in certain cases. August 8, 1890, commonly known as the Wilson Act, is amended by striking to the same extent and all that follows through territory. In other words, this bill will take the place of it and change the wording to the point where it's almost going to virtually stop interstate shipping.
Ooh.
So enough of my a rant here on this. The more I read this, the more I got absolutely, totally, shaky, angry. If they can't take care of it on the state levels, and somebody's going to do it in the federal level, this is ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. And you can ask anybody in the winery business, and they would tell you, if you are getting shipments from any other states now, this also could stop. And I'm sure all of you have seen it, because if you're listening to this program, you're familiar with wine, you're familiar with the different aspects of it. And one of the things, there's a lot of companies out there that ship a bottle or two or three or four a month or every 6 weeks or whatever. And it's just California Wine Club and National Wine Clubs, all these different things out there. If this bill passes, it could have effect on that also. So, I mean, it's far-reaching bill. It's ridiculous. Whoever thought about this obviously didn't have very many wineries in their state. If they did, the people in the state would probably scream and yell and lynching. But enough of that. I just wanted to, again, H.R. 5034. That's the number of the bill. Contact your congressmen, your representatives. The CARE Act of 2010, it is absurd. It needs to be stopped. So,
mm-hmm.
And if you all want to know anything else about it, you want to know more information about it or anything, email me at corp, C-O-R-P, at Floon, F as in Frank, L-E-W-N, Florida Estates Wines. If you look at Floon, you can see why we use that, Florida Estates Wines, F-L-E-W-N.com. Email me. I will be happy to send you the links that I have here on all that. And actually, I can send you the links for the emails for your congressmen and representatives and all that stuff, too. I can have that available for you. So if you want any of that information, contact me or call me. The winery number is 813-996-2113. I will be happy to discuss it with you and tell you how to get a hold of all that stuff. So enough of that. Thank you for listening to my rant.
Very good.
Arizona. Arizona has a lot of wineries. I was amazed at the number of wineries that are in Arizona. 17 in one website that I looked up, 18 listed in another one, 14 in another, but quite a few wineries. One area of wineries, let me get out of this screen here while I was ranting because... I want to go back to the wine reserve. One area that I was looking in, just in the northern part of the state, it's along Interstate I-17. It is in more of a hilly area, the northern part of Arizona, more of a hilly area. And there's 8 wineries listed in that area. They are... little town of Jerome has 3 of them in there. Verde Valley, Cornville, Sedonia, a bunch of those small wineries up in these areas here. And something else I noticed, too, a lot of wineries in Arizona only open 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was amazing. I tried to get hold of a lot of these wineries, and I sat there, and I'd get the response, we are open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Please call or visit us at our website and stuff like this. A lot of them that were Friday, Saturday, and Sunday wineries. And, it's almost impossible to get a hold of them on your Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So, but some of these wineries are up in the northern part there. Was a let's see, I just looked at that one and I'm trying to pull up something here and it keeps on giving me a different place there. Some of these wineries up in the northern part there, a lot of them do a wines from the grapes that are growing outside of California and grapes that are done in Arizona there. They do a big variety of different grapes in Arizona, a surprisingly large number of vinifera, and vinifera being the wine grapes that we're all so used to and so familiar with. A lot of them grow their own grapes around there. Tempranillo is a very big one, Chenin Blanc. Barbera is grown in Arizona. The Petit Verdot is used a lot, which is a nice grape, a rather strong grape. The Petit Verdot is tends to be quite powerful, and it's used for blends a lot there. But you can find a lot of different grapes growing in the areas throughout Arizona. Elevation really makes a difference in all of these, too. There's, some of these wineries are in a... elevated areas, not on the ground. I just, my son and his wife just moved to Tucson, and I was talking to some, a couple of wineries that are south of Tucson, and I said, wow, I said, you must really be hot there. I said, how can you grow stuff? And they said, no, they said, we're on plateaus. The area southeast of Tucson, called the Sonoyta wine area, is a plateau. And being on a plateau, they said that their temperature is 15 to 20 degrees cooler than it is in Tucson.
Oh, wow.
South of them. I said, wow, it's amazing. They said, but they can They said that they're at about a 5,000-foot elevation, and it's an upland area, and all the wineries are in a little town called Elgin. There's 9 wines within, you know, half hour, 40 minutes from Elgin. And a little town called Elgin, and I say little town, 370 people, and within a half hour or so, you've got 4 wineries, or 6 wineries rather. And then another little town called Sonoita, S-O-N-O-I-T-A, Sonoita. It's an Indian word, not a Spanish word. It's an Indian word. Within this area here, the elevation is up 5,000. So you're looking at a cooler climate. They get quite a bit of snow in the winter, cool nights throughout the summer because of their elevation and all of that. One of the wineries, Rancho Rosa Vineyards, is one of the largest family wineries located in the area. Sonoita is an AVA, American Viticulture Area designation. It is the only one in Arizona because of the elevation and stuff. They got the AVA was designated quite a few years ago. They were whoever started it down there, and I never did find out what the first wineries were, but whoever started the Sonoita area and the vineyards down there had the foresight to get it classified as an American Viticulture Area. So it is the only AVA in Arizona. Speaking of AVAs, Alaska has none, and I don't know about Alabama. I apologize for not checking on that when I was there, but when we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, but I don't know about Alabama. I really should. I'll see if I can't find out and let you know about any AVAs in Alabama. But Rancho Rosa Vineyards produces quite a few. They have 22 acres of fruit, and they do quite a bit of fruit wines. They make about 12,000 cases a year. They only use the fruit from the winery. They don't blend it with anything. And they also do some varietal tastings. This is one of those tasting rooms that's only open 3 days a week. They're open from Friday through Sunday. They also have something that I was really quite impressed with. I talked to the girl at the tasting bar on this. I didn't talk to anyone with in the winemaker's owners, girl tasting bar. And one of the things that they do is they donate for every bottle that they sell out of the winery. They donate 10 cents to the American Cancer Society, which I thought that was quite impressive myself. I thought that was a great thing to do, and it's a great way to promote yourself in the winery. But 10 cents out of every bottle that they sell goes to the American Cancer Society. I told them about our tip jar where we give, we have a tip jar, and all of our tips go to a different charity each month. So, you know, it's good stuff, people. It's really good stuff. But the white wines, they make a Sauvignon Blanc. A fruity Sauvignon Blanc. They brag about the New Zealand style. A Casa Cuvée, they call it. It's a blend of Marsan and Rosan grapes. It's a white wine. They also do a Sauvignon Blanc, 100% Sauvignon Blanc, fermented in American oak, so more of an oaky one away from the other one. That's they do a Chardonnay, lightly oaked Chardonnay. Whenever people say lightly oaked, and I'm sorry, but I apologize to anyone who's winemakers out there, but lightly oaked to me is a good way to cover up some of the acid. And believe me, it's a good way to cover up acid by putting a little oak in a wine. The red wines, they do a Syrah, made with 100% American Syrah, fermented in American and European oak barrels. They do a blend. They call it a CSM, and I don't know, understand why they just don't say what it is. But their CSM is a Cabernet, a Syrah, and a Merlot. It's Cabernet Sauvignon. I asked if it was a Cabernet Franc. She said no, Cabernet Sauvignon. And then that's a medal winner. The red wines, they've submitted some of these and had medals for them. Cabernet Sauvignon. They had a 15% Merlot, 15 to 20% Merlot, and they do age this for 3 to 5 years in oak. She said it's a great Cabernet. I can imagine it would be. And then they have a reserve Cabernet, made with 100% Cabernet, and this is a a limited edition Cabernet that they do longer oak aging on. She was really quite proud of their Cabernet Reserve. That's the one that they age a little bit longer. And then they have a dessert wine that she said just sweet. She said some people like it, which they do. You can't get away from that. So they have a dessert wine. Only being open 3 days a week, they have a lot of events and stuff planned. She was telling me about some of the events that are coming up and different things, and they have all sorts of stuff. Surrounded by hills and mountains, the Sonoyta area is a large elevated plateau, about 5,000-foot plateau, surrounded by more mountains and more hills around the area. So a nice winery. She was very accommodating, very interesting to talk with about that winery. The I also talked to I called Keith Joshua Vineyard. Keith Joshua Vineyards is let me see, I had it here and I've lost it now. You can hear my beep there in the background. Keith Joshua Vineyards is located on Sonoyta Valley, also or Sonoyta Plateau. This is I talked to Keith. I called and asked, I talked to someone, and he says, yeah, that's me. And I said, well, that's cool. And so I talked to Keith for a while, and I asked him, I said, is Joshua another partner or something? And he said, no, that's my middle name. So so he named it Keith Joshua Vineyard. They planted in 2005, and he said they opened in 2007. They grow a variety of grapes. They grow Tempranillo, a Cabernet Franc, Mourvèdre, Petit Verdot, Sémillon, Verdot. He has 12 acres of vineyard, and he said that he's looking at planting 2 acres a year over the, you know, continuously planting 2 acres a year. I asked him, I said, you know, where did you get your knowledge? And you know, because he said he was the winemaker and he was the everything there. And I asked him, I said, where did you get your knowledge? How did you find, do all this stuff? And he said, well, you spent 5 years down in Australia, studying in Australia at the vineyards and with people down in Australia. And he also has been doing it here for, well, like I say, since when he planted in 2005. And he sounded young. I asked him, I said, how old are you, Keith? And he's 27 years old. I was amazed at his ability and his knowledge and what he's done in those in his 27 years. He said that his dad helps him in the vineyard and in the winery, and his he does most of the stuff he does is all by hand, everything by himself and all. I asked him if he was looking at hiring anyone and doing it, and he says, well, so far he can handle it. He said, but if it does get to the point where he has to hire someone, he said he has his friends that are constantly begging him to take him off. So he's got a whole list of people that he said is going to help him. The winery is located outside of Elgin, again, that little town I was telling you about. They also, besides the grapes, I told you they do a Syrah, Zinfandel, a Riesling, and a Chenin Blanc. They've been planting other grapes. He said they are trying to get as much as they can, different varieties and different grapes growing, and without getting them too, without getting himself too overwhelmed and everything. He also has been doing an estate Voynier this summer that he plans on releasing real soon, or last summer, I'm sorry, that he plans on releasing real soon. He said it's really turned out quite well. the winery, like I say, been open. He started planning in 2005. In 2002, he purchased a property, the Keith Manning property. In 2002, he purchased property when he decided to open up a winery. Keith Manning is his name. He attended Arizona State University and studied viticulture, and then he continued down to Australia and studied viticulture there, where he has a graduate and undergraduate degrees in viticulture and enology, which is great in the study of wines and all that. The young man is just very proud of what he does. He spent a lot of time doing what he does. He's trains. He has his grapevines trained on a trellis system, and he works very hard on canopy management and all that. He says he spends a lot of time in the summer out in the vineyard. He also is trying to do a little plan of herbicides, and so he uses natural control of weeds and foliage and stuff. So he has sheep, baby doll sheep, roaming throughout his vineyard to control the weeds and everything. And it's a nice way to keep them fertilized, and so he uses that. But a great winery, Keith Joshua Vineyard. He said most of the wineries in Arizona are less than 10 years old. The Arizona wine industry, he said, started about 30 years ago. He said, if you want to trace it back, he said, you trace it back about 30 years. Most of the wineries, he said, seems like the state battles them all the time. Rules and regulations, which is becoming an underlying theme, it seems like, in almost everywhere you go in every state you walk into, there's this underlying theme of the state battling wineries and finding things wrong that they should be doing. In Arizona, you can have all three lines. You can sell, manufacture, and distribute. If you remember a couple of weeks ago when I talked about Alabama, one winery that I talked about, the father and mother was the manufacturer and wholesaler or a retailer for the wines, and the son had a separate license and could not be involved with the winery because he was a distributor. And Arizona is not set up that way. You can own all three licenses. You can be a distributor, a manufacturer, and a retailer. So that's something a little bit different for Arizona. It's designation as a domestic farm winery. Most all wineries in Arizona, you get to designation as being a farm winery. And because of that, you fall under the farm rules and regulations and stuff. And he said, this is something else. Keith was telling me that because you are a farm winery, you are a lot of rules that govern farmers. And obviously, he said, it is a different category from wineries. But they haven't changed the laws in Arizona. They haven't amended them. They haven't distinguished farms from wineries. And so, therefore, there are always little battles over wording and how things are done and how things are put together and how things are taken care of, which, you know, I mean, you expect it from the government, I think. I'm starting to realize that we have to expect all that from the government. So Keith Joshua Vineyard is ran by a young man, Keith Joshua Manning, and interesting young man.
Mm-hmm.
Another area that is that I found quite interesting. I got a hold of a couple of three wineries. I didn't get a hold of any. I only found a couple of three wineries. Was one actually east of the Sonora area, called the Southeastern Arizona Wine Growers. Little small group of wineries there. Sun Sights is the name of a town there. Wilcox is the name of another town. Outside of Wilcox, there is three wineries. And all three of them are scheduled to be opening any time this summer. Every one of them has every site I'll go on to, and all three of those have all said the same thing, you know, please come back this summer, please check with us this summer or something. Every one of them is looking at opening again this opening winery this summer. There are a couple of them there that were not. One of them was that's been open. One of them is Coronado Winery, and I called that winery I don't know how many times, and I could never get a hold of anyone. The thing was either busy or no one was there or something, and it seemed like I could never get a hold of anyone. So never talked to them. And another one was Killing Schaefer Vineyards. Killing Schaefer Vineyards, that's located just outside of town. This was another one that had a didn't have a phone number listed. It had, and when I started to look up stuff on it and everything, it said just not open to the public. And I found another thing that says by appointment only. I found this a lot in Arizona. How can you exist if you don't have a phone number and you're only open by appointment? So,
yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, it's a contradiction there for, you know, to me. I just had a hard time understanding. What's that? It's just the front, you know. I mean, you can wonder what the purpose of all this. I also got a Echo Canyon Winery. Echo Canyon Winery is another one. They that one was interesting. I read some stuff about them. They make a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Syrah, a Merlot, a Pinot Noir, Primitivo, Petit Syrah, Zinfandel, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Sedona Nouveau, which is I don't know what grape that particular grape is. And they have a phone number. I try to call them, but when I talked to them, they said they don't have a tasting room. I don't know if it's a dry county, what was going on or anything, but they didn't have a tasting room. I don't know if they ship or you sell to stores or stuff. Arizona, I ran across a lot of blanks in Arizona. Like I mentioned earlier, my son and daughter-in-law live down there, and they are having a baby soon. Yeah. Actually, it could be any day, but once they have the baby, I am going to fly down to Arizona and visit my new grandbaby. When I do plan on visiting some wineries down there. Good. And just so I can get a chance to walk up to them and say, hey, what gives you find out what's going on with that. But it's Arizona wines. I've had Arizona wines before. I've tasted them. In a couple of three different places, I've had an opportunity. There was a convention I went to a couple of years ago, and they had Arizona wines. I had a chance for Arizona wines, and it was really the ones I had were phenomenal. I was really impressed. But from what I look on different websites and trying to find stuff, and it's just like they don't have any they're just not customer friendly, and I don't know if it's what the word is. Here's a good example. Whispering Peak Vineyards is located in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is one of their sites, and it says on there, Whispering Peak wines are never sold at retail. They're only exclusive to hotels and restaurants and private clubs.
That's weird.
And that's it. And they don't have a no taste room. They have a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Chardonnay, Merlot, a White Zin. No wine tastings, no tours, no restaurants, no picnic area, no gift shop, no weddings, no corporate events, no wine club, no ordering online, no family friendly, no nothing. It just, you know, and yet, you know, Whispering Peak in Scottsdale, Arizona. Arizona wineries, if you're listening to me, get in touch with me. Explain to me what the word is on this. When I talked to Keith, he seemed quite excited about the winery, but then everyone else, almost without exception, everyone else I tried to call and tried to talk to was just, you know, I wasn't getting a whole lot of information. I did call Cocopelli Winery, and Cocopelli Winery had quite a site, really. Cocopelli Winery listed a whole bunch of stuff, different names to call. They had catering. They had all sorts of things that you can get a hold of at a Cocopelli Winery. And when I got a hold of them, I got a hold of a young lady who was working at the tasting bar, and I told her who I was and what I was looking for. And she said, oh, let me get the information. This is great. This is wonderful. We'd love to talk with you. And so I told her about the program today and all that. And I said, are you going to be calling? She said, no. She says, I'll get a hold of the guy who's in charge of all this stuff, and I'll get him to call you. She said, and I'll hook it up, and I'll do everything. So I said, okay, great, wonderful. You know, obviously she didn't hook it through, and because we haven't heard from her.
Right.
But Cocopelli Winery is really neat labels. I mean, their labels are really fantastic. I saw their labels. They have a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Private Reserve, and regular. They have a Merlot, a Chianti. They make a Sweet Lucy, a wine that they call a Sweet Lucy, which is probably a dessert type wine. No doubt everybody has to have those and has to have that style. White wines, they have a variety of white wines ranging from a Chardonnay to a Private Reserve Chardonnay, Gewurztraminer, a Rhine wine, a Muscat Canelli, which also is Muscat Canelli is usually sweet. A Pinot Grigio, prices are reasonable, $13.50 and $17.50, $14, stuff like that. So the prices aren't outrageous, and the prices are really, really, you know, within range. White Merlot, White Zin, Wine Margarita, Dessert Rosé, those are even cheaper, $11.50, $9.50, and stuff like that. So reasonably priced. Cocopelli is, you know, a lot of reasonably priced wines, a lot of wines they make there at Cocopelli. I wish I could have talked to someone who could have answered some stuff. They also make some sparkling wines, a couple of sparkling wines, one called an Imperial Cur, another one called a Royal Cur, K-I-R, Cure, I guess maybe. And then they also have a couple of specialty wines, a Ratafia and a Porto Roja. So Cocopelli makes a lot of different wineries and a lot of different stuff, but they also have a couple of bistros. You can call and get reservations for the bistros. They have catering and tastings, private parties and stuff. It's really quite a thing. Compared to some of these others that are, they don't do anything to sell to retail. This one has salads and dinner menus, and they have lunch and seafood side dishes and appetizers and all sorts of stuff. So wineries in Arizona, get in touch with me. If you've been there, get in touch with me, too. Tell me more about them. Once I tell you more about them.
Okay.
And we're almost out of time. I have to stop here.
Yeah. And I have to play a quick commercial.
Yes, do that.
For this weekend.
Yes.
For Saturday. Okay, we'll be right back in 43 seconds. Right after.
Coming up this Saturday, it's Wine Festival, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. Enjoy live music, food, homemade crafts, and unique gift items, and more. And, of course, world-class wines from Florida Estates Winery. This event is free and open to the public. Enjoy the great outdoor setting at the winery this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wine Festival, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call 813-996-2113 or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. It's always a great day at Florida Estates Winery.
And in Elgin, Arizona, it's 41 degrees.
Tonight's
41.
40 all.
And tonight's low is going to be 33, and it was currently raining with showers. Vineyards is located in Napa Valley, California.
That's a home. Oh, Ackerman. Okay, that's the one we asked earlier. Thank you.
Yes, I looked it up. But check out Wine Fest this weekend, this Saturday, April 24th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and we're almost out of time. We got less than 30 seconds. Ron, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip back home.
Yes, absolutely. I'll jump on my bike and head over. And thank you to Peoples and Mics, Blog Talk Radio, all the listeners on each of those. We look forward to hearing from you. Give us an email. Send us email. Give the winery a call. I know they'd love to hear from you. I only have 10 seconds left, so thank you, and we'll see you next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on
Arkansas. Next
Arkansas. Ooh, okay, cool. Thank you. We'll be back in a week.
In a week.
And 0 seconds. Woohoo! Okay.
And that's what they say. As they say in the business, that's a wrap.